Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette. Happy Father's Day, a day late. We're in Las Vegas, Nevada on the free frequency modulation, Free FM, 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. I'm here with Michael Goudeau, who had all the guys in Journey stand up and sing together in the Lance Burton show last night. Is that a complete lie?
That's a complete lie, yes.
Yeah, I figured. Norm is the gossip columnist in Vegas. And I don't think, has he ever printed anything accurate?
Not that I know.
Probably
of.
Never. And he has said that the whole band Journey stood up and broke into a chorus during the Lance Burton show.
That's what he said, yeah.
Which, if they had done it, would be rude, but I guess they didn't do it. 866-313-FREE, that's 3733. Today I want to talk about how I hate Frankenstein. There's a lot of stuff, anti-cloning, anti-putting animal genes into humans. There's anti-selection for no diseases. I think that people should play God, and we'll get to that in a moment. 866-313-FREE. But first, we got this this really nice letter from this guy from Seoul, Korea, and I didn't know if we should read it on the air because I don't like to read things that just say, you know, you guys are good. Some we get letters that say you guys are good. I don't like to read them. And then Happy Jack got the idea of my sister reading it. My sister is here visiting. She's from Greenfield, Massachusetts. Her name is Valda Stowe. She's my big sister, and she is going to read the letter for you. My Father's Day was terrific because my sister and her son, who is my nephew, coincidentally, cooked a wonderful New England meal for me. You know what a boiled dinner is, you know?
Sort of.
So you don't know what a boiled dinner is at all.
No.
No, that's not a coon-ass thing. It's
no.
It's not a Louisiana thing.
Does it involve a roux?
There's no roux. There's no roux involved whatsoever. It's just like carrots, onions, beets, potatoes, cabbage, and either corned beef or ham, all cooked together and boiled up, and it's delicious and very, very New England. No Cajun spice, no quahogs in it, nothing, just good New England food. But this is a nice letter, and this is my sister, Valda Stowe, who's going to read this list written, How You Know You're Listening to the Penn Jillette Radio Show Too Much. Take it away.
Okay. This is Signs You're Listening to Penn Radio A Little Too Much. You've started to consider juggling as a legitimate career with long-term job stability.
Yeah, we've given demonstrations of that. We have, yeah.
You start parsing compound words improperly and adding in a little hand clap. I'm going to the books store. I'm from Penn's Pennsylvania. I didn't do that right.
You did a fine job. And that's because we always say it's bulls hit. Yeah, that's why they're saying that.
I better keep my day job, I guess. When you have too much of something, you describe it as being lousy or maggoty. Man, my dresser is just maggoty with unmatched socks.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's also a Newfoundland thing. You know, they say maggoty with things up there. That's where I picked it up. Go ahead.
When someone asks you how you are, you always respond, never better, boss.
Well, you know, I'm inclined to do that, and I'm guilty of that. Go ahead.
You realize the best way to argue with religious, New Age, and political nuts is to simply say, you're probably right.
That works, too.
You've stopped worrying that you're topping 300 pounds, even if you're only 5'7". You grieve you're the first generation in modern times without a ventriloquist.
Now, you know, that one, how does he know that? Have we ever said that on the air?
Yes, we have.
We have, okay.
We have indeed.
I thought there was some psychic stuff.
You have a newfound respect for Carrot Top.
Well, you know, I'm guilty of that. Okay.
When someone says, you've got to ask yourself, you quickly interrupt and say, in a dirty, hairy voice, did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Do I feel lucky? Well, do ya, punk?
You should do that whole dirty, hairy monologue. There's no doubt about it. We should get a tape of you doing all of that. Go ahead.
And this is great. You see nothing wrong with naming your firstborn after a regional soda. This is my daughter, Faygo Red Top.
Red Pop.
Red Pop. No, I'm fired.
That was my sister.
Thank you, Alda.
Yeah, she's so much better than I am on the radio. There's a clarity. There's a focus that we just totally lack. So you happy with that, Jack?
Very good. Very good.
We're gonna get on. Are you trying to run out of here now?
Yeah.
Okay, you can. You're afraid to be in this room. Okay, she's gonna leave. Normally we wait to the break, but that was my. My sister and Jack's helping her out of the room right now. She'll go back in the other room. That was pretty beautiful.
That was great.
That was a really nice idea.
Really. You know the guy who wrote this is in Korea?
Seoul, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. He's in Seoul. She was so afraid because I told her not to say the last name. So she was afraid that she might get carried away. But that's from
Carl.
Carl in South Korea who wrote that up. Boy, she read that really well. I was really happy she came in and did that. I want to talk about the 866-313-3733. There's a few disturbing articles here. This is an article that says, this is from irishhealth.com. I don't know why we have irishhealth.com, but we do. Couples who are at risk of having a child with a serious genetic disorder, such as cystic fibrosis, may soon be able to select an embryo which is unaffected through IVF. Scientists at Guy's and St. Thomas Hospital in the UK have launched new technology which allows more couples to benefit from pre-implantation genetic diagnostics, or diagnosis, or PGD, which PGD is much better than me having to say pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. My sister should read this. My sister should be reading this. It's a technique used to help couples who are at risk of having a child with a serious genetic disorder to select an unaffected embryo. Such disorders now include cystic fibrosis, sickle cell disease, and spinal muscular atrophy. While most couples seeking PGD are fertile, they require IVF treatment like that used for infertile couples. This PGH, it sounds like just a fabulous thing, right? What could be better than weeding out some of these horrible diseases? But, of course, there are ethical implications to this. People are already writing that they're very worried about doing this kind of stuff because it then is human beings playing God, and we should not be able to do this. There's another thing they're doing. It's God's work, yeah. And we're only doing God's work because God doesn't do it.
He didn't show up.
he didn't clock in at all. But this is one thing that bothers me. The book Frankenstein, which you read when you're a kid, you know, and the movies about it too. Although the movies hit it a little less, the idea behind the book Frankenstein is not let's make a cool monster to run around. The idea is that human beings should not be tampering with nature. And in the original Frankenstein, and someone will call and give me the exact details on this, or they'll write in 866-313-3733, penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. Someone will help me out with this. But in the original Frankenstein, there is a line cut out of it. Right before the monster comes alive, Dr. Frankenstein does say, I am God, or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And the point of view clearly in the book, and the reason the book was written as a monster story, is to warn people away from playing God. And I guess that no one's going to argue that you shouldn't be doing this with cystic fibrosis and so on. But they're also, on top of this, saying, and this is something you'll care about a lot, that couples that have a lot of autism in their family, and as you know, we know nothing about what causes autism, but we do know that it's on the rise. It's
10% of the cases are genetically based,
right? And it is much more common in boys and girls.
Prevalent in boys, yeah.
What's it, 9 times?
Yeah,
or something?
Yeah, 90,
something like that. There are couples that have a lot of autism in their family that are choosing to go to IVF and choose the sex of their child so they have a girl to eliminate the possibility of autism, Yeah, reduce the possibility by a factor of 9.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Simone Aspis, I guess, A-S-P-I-S, Aspis, of the British Council of Disabled People warned screening out autism would breed a fear that anyone who is different in any way will not be accepted. It would create a society where only perfection is valued. My question here is it better to allow these things to be done by random chance? Do you want to just say that random chance is going to rule? And this is going to be the important thing. I think in this century coming up, it's pretty clear to everybody that most of the major breakthroughs in science, many of them will be in medicine, and that a lot of the ethical concerns, we have to make decisions about this because the hippies and the Christians are going to come down really heavily and say that we are not allowed to use genetic screening. And I think that genetics is the next step in really health care. You're not going to be doing stuff after the fact, but do it way before the fact. And is it okay for for human beings to play God? Can't we just do that? Isn't it just okay? 866-313-FREE, 3733.
There are already deaf people coming out saying, well, why would you cure deafness? I'm fine being deaf. I'm happy being deaf.
Right, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you want to be deaf, stay deaf. Don't get the operation. And I don't even think there's anything wrong with screaming that people shouldn't. Yeah, of course, screaming wouldn't do any good to deaf people. But to writing notes, let's say, on a big pad.
Very big pad.
Very big pad. Very big pad and very big letters saying, stay deaf. You can make that choice, but I don't think there should be any legislation at all. Let's take a phone call. Who we got?
We got Terry on line two.
Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hello?
Hello, Terry. This is Penn and Godot. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I really, really dig the show. A lot of fun.
Thanks so much.
I was calling to comment on the novel Frankenstein. I'm actually an author and a filmmaker, and I did actually an adaptation of Frankenstein for young adults about 10 years ago. And honestly, in my opinion, Frankenstein isn't so much about tampering with the forces of nature, God, as it is actually the whole thing is a testimonial on parenting.
On parenting?
On parenting, on being a parent.
Because of the way Dr. Frankenstein deals with his monster, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. And actually, we play God all the time when we have children.
Sure.
And in my opinion, the novel Frankenstein is a cautionary tale about bringing a life into this world and not giving it any guidance and being ultimately responsible for the havoc it wreaks.
Right, but I believe that Mary Shelley did say stuff about the dangers of science and playing God. I believe there was a Luddite point of view in there. I'm not sure. I'm not saying that was the major one, but that's the one that I got. But I can see it as a parenting thing too. It's been so long since I've read it. But thanks a lot, Terry. Thanks a lot for calling. Do you have other calls coming in there?
I do. We have Scott on line one.
Hey, Scott, what's up, man? This is Penn.
Hey, good afternoon, Penn. I just wanted to take a little bit of different spin on this.
Sure.
Nobody wants to have the child with cystic fibrosis, autism. And we all agree that it's a terrible thing. And, what about, instead of the stance of playing God, what about the stance of healthcare? It's recently been, stated that healthcare costs, as we all know, are huge, going up drastically. I had a family member that actually went through this and had to abort a baby at the 8th month due to such a severe genetic dwarfism. Uh-huh. And they are now going through IVF right now in experimental treatment here at Johns Hopkins out in Maryland. For something very similar to what you're describing about picking an embryo that has the best chance of survival.
Right.
And although it's in the beta testing, they're dealing with a lot of people now. The cost is substantial. But what about really the cost, of the child throughout their life? If they have cystic fibrosis, they have autism, the extra expenses put on the healthcare system. So you would think that by treatments and by choices like this coming out, that, in fact, it is helpful in the long run to certain families because they're not burdened with this huge expense of raising a child because the child will be healthier and able to participate in society a little better than if it were the case where they had a disease like this.
That's a really, really good point. When you have us all chipping in for health care, when you have essentially socialized medicine, as we're very close to in this country, and probably with the Massachusetts laws and so on, getting closer and closer all the time to a Canadian or an English system. When you have that kind of thing where we're all paying for it, then all of these arguments become very, very valid. Then it becomes just a plus or minus column. If we put this person through IVF and they can pick the embryo that doesn't have these problems, it is certainly cheaper for society in the long run. You can make that argument in terms of dollars and cents, and I think it's a really valid one. It's just not the one that I'm dealing with now. One of the big arguments I have, it seems that I have most in my private life, is the argument about morality coming first, and the end does not justify the means. And even if it saves us a ton of money, if it's morally wrong, I don't think we should do it. I have a friend that I refer to as my nut hippie friend in Florida who always says, well, you know, we have to get the homeless off the street. If we just take more money from the rich, we can do that. And my question is always, first, you have to say, have you said the end justifies the means? Have you said that if it's immoral to take money from the rich, you can still do it to help the homeless? And I can never get him to understand that before you talk about any pragmatic reasons, you first have to deal with the moral one. So on this one, although your pragmatic argument of money is a very, very good one, first, we have to, as a society, decide that it is okay to make these decisions. So that'd be my only point with you. But thanks a lot for calling. And best of luck to, he said it was his sister? You still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, sister.
Yeah.
Was it his sister?
I think it was, yes.
Okay. Best of luck to her.
We have an article here from the World News that 11 members of one family have all had their stomachs removed after advances in genetic testing showed they would probably die young from a rare hereditary form of gastric cancer. Is this playing God? They had their stomachs removed before they got sick.
What do they put in place of a stomach?
Shoes.
Shoes.
Really nice shoes.
It's mostly shoes they put in there.
They removed most of their stomach. They still have a bit of stomach.
Well, the really cool thing on this, when it gets really, really wacky, is when they're able to do genetic testing and find out that that certain people are predisposed to cancer from smoking certain aren't. So you could just, those people who have that genetic screen could smoke with impunity. That's when it gets really, really complicated. I'm going to talk more about this hating Frankenstein thing after this. 866-313-3733. Very, very big thanks to my sister Val Bestow, who did a beautiful, beautiful job reading that wonderful letter from Carl in Seoul. We're going to be right back. Hang around. Yeah, that's the Mike Jones Enormous Orchestra playing the Ben Gillette theme, recorded right here at my home, the Slammer. 866-313-3733. Penradio@gmail.com if you want to send us a Gmail. And penradio.com is our website. If you go there, you can get clicked right over to Jones Jazz and hear some serious Mike Jones bebop piano, like Oscar Peterson, only a little bit faster. Yeah, pull your mic down, Godot, in case there's something you might want to say.
Something might happen.
This is the day I've been dreading. I've been dreading this day for... let me see how long I've been dreading it. I've probably been dreading this day for about 40 years. Today, Paul McCartney turned 64 years old, either today or yesterday, which means everybody is talking about, even Patrick is singing When I'm 64. A cute little story about his grandchildren singing to him. But what makes it, what mitigates this this horror that I've been dreading is it actually ends up being pretty funny, because Paul McCartney asked the question, will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? And Heather McCartney answered, no.
I think she took almost $64 million of his money. Right. That's...
and $1 million for every year you've been alive, you cute beetle. So, but anyway, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, but a happy birthday to Paul McCartney. I just, you know, he's a fine bass player, great singer, and wrote some wonderful songs, and he's a beetle, and I should love him. But ever since that liver let die thing, which I will not get into.
Liver?
Liver let die. Live or Let Die thing.
As usual. Lyric issues.
What's that?
You have real lyric issues.
I have real lyric issues. Live or Let Die.
Oh, okay.
Is that better?
That's better.
Live
Thank
or
you.
Let Die. The line from Frankenstein that was cut, this is from my good friend Natasha in Los Angeles. She has said the cut line was, "Now I know what it's like to be God. Now I know what it's like to be God." But that was just gone. Just monster comes back up. But that was the point that I think that was the point that Mary Shelley was making. That we one of the points. You know, book is never one point. Maybe Atlas Shrugged is one point, but most books are more than one point. I got a phone call there.
I sure do. This is Matt on line 4.
Hey Matt, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Never better, boss. How you doing, man?
Big fan of the show.
Thanks so much.
We were talking about the whole selecting of embryos thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that movie Gattaca with Ethan Hawke and Jude Law.
Mm-hmm.
Where basically...
And Uma Thurman.
And Uma Thurman, yeah.
How did you figure
Thurman,
out?
Yeah, we don't
Uma, or as we call her, Uma and her Thurmans. Yeah.
Well, in that movie, basically discrimination is down to a science because... everyone who's anyone is genetically engineered, and if you're not, you're labeled as an invalid. So you basically can't get anything better than, like, a janitorial-type job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's all about Ethan Hawke is someone who hasn't been genetically engineered, and he overcomes the odds and fools everybody into thinking that he has so that he can basically show them that mm-hmm. he can still perform as good as anyone else.
Right.
But my whole issue is that... you know, with the whole selection of embryos thing, that sort of reality becomes true.
Well, it's a very big jump to say that if you have genetic engineering, or as they're calling it, designer babies, that all of a sudden your political system does the same thing. I mean, I think that that we already have a huge amount of that in that if you are wealthy, your kids go to better schools. You can be fast-tracked to all sorts of, all sorts of better schools. And many people will tell you that going to a big fancy school is not so much for the education, but for the networking. You get to meet people. And certainly, if you're trying to write comedy, we know that the whole, comedy writing is very much controlled by Ivy League schools. I mean, if you want to write on The Simpsons, you better have gone to the proper school and know the right people. And so that already happens, and the fact that you bring it down to the level of a petri dish, I don't think changes the legislation. And I mean, I don't mean to insult you because, of course, you know this, but that is a movie. And the movie, in order to get plot, takes all sorts of other steps as well. I don't think that the fact that there could be laws discriminating necessarily relate to the choices made in a petri dish. I mean, you can very easily have laws that that support discrimination without having genetic engineering. We had them in this country for years, so I don't really know. Do you see what I mean there?
Yeah, I don't think it comes down to a matter of law per se. It's just okay. This is your medical history, and you have X, Y, and Z, or you don't have X, Y, and Z. So if you don't have it, sorry, we can't hire you, or sorry,
right,
you're not qualified.
How do you solve that? I mean, how do you solve that? Do you solve that by having random chance control genetics and diseases, or do you try to make the human race a little better? That'd be my question.
I don't really have a solution. I mean, my personal feeling is that we should use every tool necessary and possible to improve ourselves, but at the same time, we do have to consider ethical problems, you know? So.
Yeah, you know, this is the basic problem with insurance. If insurance was done properly, healthy people would get it cheaper than sick people. And one of the things we're deciding is that as a society, that shouldn't be done. And that kind of decision, the decision whether you hire someone who has a disease, like whether you hire someone who's HIV positive, whether you hire someone that whose health care is going to be through the roof or something like that, those decisions already have to be made. And I don't know what difference that makes in simply having genetic testing at a preconception level. I don't know what difference it makes to those ethical questions. They're certainly there. They're certainly important. And when we had genetic babies growing up, if I lived that long, I would like to think that the side that I would be on is to give those babies as much freedom as possible. But the freedom, I don't know if you get freedom in the future by controlling freedom now, by limiting freedom now. That would be that would be my thought on it.
Okay.
Oh, I mean, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling, man. You got another call you want to take there?
Sure. I was just going to say that, I mean, since you can now pay to have your eyesight improved, is that a form of discrimination?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it won't be long before only the poor and me will be wearing glasses. you know, I think that all that kind of stuff. Matt,
should we stop it because of that?
Yeah, Matt King's wife, Jen,
Denver,
very, very, very smart woman, said that she felt that now the real limits to jobs were dental work. Having had braces, teeth, she thought that that good teeth were more important than an Ivy League education. She said you were not going to rise very high in a corporate world if you had really bad teeth, and that's just class stuff. I mean, everybody had bad teeth 100 years ago, and now you've got richer people having better teeth. It really shows what strata you're in. And I think that that's an issue with all of this stuff. If you have things you can pay for that make your life better, then other people are going to notice. And you end up with that Kurt Vonnegut world where if you really want to make everyone equal, then the people who are faster runners have to have weights on their legs, and the people who are thinner have to be carrying around more weight. I mean, that's taking it to the absurdist level. But I think it's really valid. I mean, the thing is, we all have different qualities. We're all dealt different hands, and the way we play those is different. And certainly, without medical science, I wouldn't be alive. I had a hernia when I was 3 weeks old, and had to go to the hospital for some surgery. And had that happened even 15 years earlier, I would be dead. And many, many people that I know who are alive today would not be alive without science playing God at some time or another, you know. And certainly my daughter Moxie is an IVF baby. She's a test tube baby. And we wouldn't have her if not for scientific choices. Of course, Zoltan, our newest son, is conceived, as they say, another word for fun, naturally, and so he will get $35,000 more throughout his life because he cost us less. We have another call you want to take?
We do. We have Brian on line 6.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about natural selection and all that.
Shoot.
Basically, you know, humans have had all this science that you were talking about, not to say that you shouldn't have been selected or anything, but, you know, a lot of humans are allowed to continue surviving under circumstances that they normally wouldn't, whereas other animal species, only the strongest animal gets to keep going, and
that's
what makes the species stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So while medical science has, in a way, kind of stopped that, if this type of stuff can actually allow it to resume again, allow us to continue strengthening our species, which is one of basically two things that all species want to do, is reproduce and strengthen their species.
Well, that's beautifully put. We didn't have to go through the horror of those people dying, and some of those people that would have died in the wild, as it were, because they didn't run fast enough. Stephen Hawking is a great example. He would not be alive now without science and without all the money and breakthroughs you've had. And his brain helps us as a species to do much better. So I think that's a very, very nice argument on that whole thing, that now we can get a chance to do unnatural selection, some really well-thought-out playing God suggestion selection. I think it's a really good idea. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling. That's a really nice way to put that argument. You know, I like the way it starts out with this really cruelty of natural selection and a lot of us should have died, and then turns around to this really kind thing that says and now we can all work together to make everyone stronger, which is the way it should be. 866-313-FREE. This is Free FM. This is Penn Jillette. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. And it seems pretty likely we'll be back. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette. We're back on Free FM. Told you it was likely. 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. We're talking about playing God, humans playing God, which I am all for. I think I'm totally for it. Now I know what it feels like to be God. penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. We had a few pretty good calls. Like that last one a lot. You want to take some more calls now?
Sure, we have lots of calls. Although your wife points out that Zoltan is not going to get that extra $35,000 because he's eaten it.
Yes, our son, who is now 3 weeks old, eats more than I think any human being alive. It's astonishing. He's supposed to eat every 3.5 hours, and they say, you know, wake him up. If he hasn't eaten in 3.5 hours, wake him up. He hasn't gone more than an hour, you know, and he eats like 3 times what Moxie ate. But I've been told that that's a real sex difference, that little boys eat more than little girls. Of course, you're a little girl. Is enormous.
Yes, she's a monster, yes.
Yeah, so probably all out of line there, no real information. But let's take a phone call there.
On line 5.
If he hasn't eaten it yet, he already will.
line 5, Jason.
Go. What's up, Jason?
Hey, guys, how are you doing today?
Never better, boss. How are you?
Not bad. Usually, Penn, I'll tell you the truth. Usually I'll disagree with a lot of the things you say, but today I've got to agree with you. I totally agree with playing with God, and I'll tell you why. I've got a 1-year-old son at home. He's got a genetic disorder called mitochondrial DNA complex 4 deficiency. If there was anything, absolutely anything, any way I could do to make sure that he lives past the age of 5, as the doctors have told me that they do not expect him to, I would do it. Playing God? Absolutely. I don't care. And I would tell you, I'm a Christian on top of this. And my opinion is I don't care about the law. I don't care about ethics. I don't care about morality. The important thing is that my son lives past the age of 5. And this is, I think, is a view that the lawmakers, George Bush, the whole mess of them, just does not take into consideration whatsoever. If there was anything I could do for my son, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, I'm very, very sorry, and we certainly wish you the best of luck.
I've got more. I've heard more sympathies than I could possibly stand. But,
yeah.
I don't know what else to say then, sir. But thanks an awful lot for calling, and it breaks my heart. And everybody agrees, and I'm that's why you're getting so much sympathy. And I wish we could do something more concrete.
Yeah, let's hope science catches
let's
up.
Let's hope
with
science
you.
Catches up with you. Let's hope science can do something in a few years. Thanks a lot. You know that's a heartbreaking thing. We have a similar letter that kind of ties right in with that from a guy named Tim, who says, hey, Penn, I'm really glad you're talking about this whole playing God idiocy. For the past years, I have worked directly with individuals with various mental handicaps, be they genetic or environmental. I can't imagine that any of them, if given a choice, even the least handicapped of the group, would choose their disability over even a small chance of a normal life. For some reason, people seem to have a moral imperative not to play God. In my opinion, they are completely blind to the potential of care that can be provided for so many people through the modification screening of genetics. I have heard doomsday scenarios from super soldiers to mutations to neo-eugenics. Making up words is so much fun. That's his comment, not mine. But it is very easy for us to throw out these factless arguments when you and your family aren't suffering from the disability of another. It is from the disability of another. Okay. It is true that any disabled person is just as valid and special as any of us, but the potential to remove these genetics that cause so much suffering, not only for the individual but for society as a whole, far outweighs the ethical maxims that fearmongers like to spew. Enjoy the show, Tim Graham. Oh, I said his last name. It's okay. That's really the point. And then someone else writes in with a point of view. I wish this person had called in, said, I'd like to talk to him. You thought he was just nuts. You just read it as a nut letter. And I said, oh, no, I like that point of view. He writes simply this, or she writes simply this. We don't know the sex. Our genes have as much to say about our daily destinies as astrology, with some obviously debilitating exceptions. There was an article in the there's a letter to the editor in the New York Times today from a shrink who was talking about the genetic issue and the false dichotomy of nature nurture. And if I may read into what this person said, because that's what I do, I think they're talking about the fact that we go back and forth on whether it's nature or nurture. If you have a genetic predisposition
sure.
to do something, how does that change your daily life? And I think there's a very good point that once you have your genetics in place, then it's pinball. You're bouncing off things. You make human choices. I do believe we're not all controlled by our genes, that it doesn't all tell us exactly what to do. But I also believe it's part of it. And I think that that's part of the mistake in the way human beings think, is we always think in terms of dichotomy. Is it nature or is it nurture? And you read that. What was that great book, the gene...
Dennett's book. Yeah. Selfish Gene?
No, there's another.
That's another one. That's another
one. Yeah, it's not even
Dennett. Genome.
Genome, the human genome. There's a great book that just kind of tears it down to nature and nurture.
He says it's all genetics.
He says it's all genetics, but there's no nature and nurture difference. He does make that point very clear, that it doesn't eliminate free will or anything. You can still do whatever you want, but the genetics are the base.
You're trapped on whatever board you're playing on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You're trapped on the board.
You're on the Ouija board, you're on the Monopoly board, that's what you're born with. You're born on a board, you play that game.
Yeah, but then you can still throw dice and move the pieces around, because
yes,
there's nothing you and I like more than overextending a metaphor. You get that get-out-of-jail-free card. I want to take another phone call.
Let's talk to Chris on line 7.
Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Ben, just take my call. And don't say your line. You don't have to just skip it. My point about this thing is, I think we're having this whole argument cart before the horse. You know?
Shoot.
You know.
Go ahead, explain it.
Sorry, the idea of in the 21st century saying we shouldn't play God with medicine is ridiculous. We've been playing God with medicine since we started medicine. And, you know, we've already gone down that road, and the road has always been keeping people healthy and making them healthy is good for humanity, period. And we always choose that way. Otherwise, we'd all have died. We'd have gone septic and paper cuts.
Absolutely true. There's a friend of mine has a T-shirt that says, God wants you dead. And the thing people seem to forget is that without medicine, without science, in natural childbirth, you lose about 50% of the babies and about 50% of the mothers. That is the survival rate, just pure. And life expectancy for a human being is about 27, 28 years old. They've shown that. That's when you die without science. So any of us that are over 28 years old, and any of us who have ever had a problem taken care of by medicine, any of us who love somebody that either one of those things is true for, really has to say that playing God is totally okay. I don't see any difference between genetic engineering and splinting a broken arm. I don't see any difference between genetic engineering and dentistry. If you believe that people are not allowed to play God, then you just take your chances. Do not eat any of our food. Do not go to any of our hospitals. Just live out in the woods and see how you do. So I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, can I make one more?
Sure, of course you can.
Yeah, when people have gone to a physician and then they make this argument, I don't even think that always that it's something that they're really against. I think people take abstract arguments, and they're looking at a moral perspective, and they're trying to gauge which is morally superior, not in the arrogant way, but in which one that weighs out more to them.
Yeah, which
and,
one is?
And they make, yeah. And they make decisions that are emotive and aren't really based on what they would do or even what they would want other people to do. You know, that in their gut, they don't really believe these things, but as abstract concepts which don't affect anybody's life, mm-hmm. they're able to make this distinction. In one way they're being too connected, and the other way they're being too distant.
That's one of the reasons that I respect the real Christian scientists that will not take any sort of medical care. They absolutely hang tough with that and do not take medical care. I respect them much more than the people who go in, get chemotherapy, and then say it was their prayers that saved them. I mean, I think that you, if you're going to be pragmatic, if you're going to want to use any medicine to save your ass, you should admit it and not say, thank God. You know, we went in for IVF to have our to have our daughter. There were all over the doctor's bulletin boards are all these things thanking God for their child, whereas they should be able to at least face, even if they do believe in God and have a very strong faith, that the doctor had something to do with it. So I think that you've got to have your morality and your pragmatism live together happily, and to ignore one at the other, I think, is a very big mistake. But thanks a lot for calling. I was cutting him off a little short because I want to see if we can squeeze in one more call. This is a cool subject. I like you.
We have a really good, actually a really good Gmail here.
Well, lay it on me.
Okay, this is from Rob. He says, interesting that you mentioned Stephen Hawking. What if 60 years ago Hawking's parents had access to genetic tests showed he would be predisposed to the muscular disorder he suffers from?
Our
Asperger's. How many scientists and intelligent minds would be lost if parents could choose not to have children with it?
God damn. That's
shut up, Rob.
We were going along so well. We were going along so terrifically. Yes, that's the issue. But do we get more Hawkings from random chance, or do we get more Hawkings from putting a little bit of getting a little bit of information there? That might be a good question to ask Hawking, you know, because those genes for the intelligence might also be there. Although there are people that argue, and it's a nutty argument, that one of the reasons Hawking has done so much, so many amazing things, is that he's not distracted by concerns of the flesh, which of course he is. He talks about women all the time, but he's not yeah. He's not able to go out and run around. Maybe, you know, playing softball actually takes away one of your major astrophysics breakthrough. Certainly, I want to tell you right now, I have no doubt that I would have done as much as Hawking has done if I just couldn't walk around.
Yeah.
Let's
you
take
don't even
one more
like
call.
To walk around.
I hate to walk around. Let's take one more call.
This is Chris on line 7.
Hey, what's up, Chris? Chris?
We may have already done Chris. Let's go to...
Okay. Okay, we're taking... Who's this? Hello? I'll just say hello. Okay. Hello, Donnie. You
hey,
there, Donnie?
How you guys doing? Yeah, I'm here.
Very well, thanks. How are you, boss?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I was engineering people to be healthier and live longer. We'll be living, you know, 150, maybe 200 years, and we'll overpopulate the planet even more so.
I don't see any evidence of that at all. The overpopulation thing is something I don't buy. I think it's a myth, and I think that science can take care of all of that. Certainly the U.S. can take 3 or 4 times the number of people that we have. And if you look at it, there's no such thing as a natural resource. The only natural resource we have is human ingenuity. And I think we can take care of all those things. The problems we have that we call overpopulation are, in my mind, problems of dictatorships, problems of lack of freedom, and so on. So I'm not worried about that. And also, as people get healthier, they tend to healthier, longer lives, and more affluent. They tend to have fewer kids anyway. So I think that living to 150 is a great idea. I'm totally for it, and I'm always skeptical of anybody that bitches about overpopulation. I just don't buy it. But I got to. I want to give you a chance to answer, but you know I just can't because I'm looking at the clock. But thanks an awful lot for calling.
All
man,
right,
I hate to
show.
Do that. I hate to cut somebody off who's making a point that disagrees with me, and then I go, oh, the clock on the wall says you can't win this argument because I'm going to cut you off, you bastard. So I apologize for that, but it really is the clock on the wall this time. It was a great discussion. Remember, tomorrow is Monkey Tuesday. We'll be here with Monkey Tuesday tomorrow. This is Penn Jillette and Michael Godeau saying, you know, even if you're not perfectly genetic engineered, love each other. Okay? We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.